Well, hello everybody. Welcome to the second session of this year's TechEd. I'll be talking about modern C++. When I talked to one of my friends and said I'm going to be doing talk about C++, he sent me this picture. Apparently it's a powerful brand. So a little bit about myself. I started programming when I was 9 years old, and my uncle sent me this computer magazine at the time, which had few illustrations about different programming languages that were used back in the middle of 80s. And C++ wasn't one of them, but C was. And C was represented as a sports car running straight off the cliff. And I think that's a very good analogy. When I started programming professionally in 2000, I landed my first job with Visual C++, and I really loved programming languages itself, and I am still really opinionated about languages I tend to use. So I was pretty hesitant to move on to Java and pretty hesitant to move on to C Sharp in the first few versions. Started programming with C Sharp back when .NET 1.2 came out. Wasn't overly too impressed until we got version 2 in generics. That's when things got serious. And I am still loving C Sharp from that moment on. It's still my favorite language. In the last year, I moved on to a new position in Marker Metro, where I work on porting games and apps. And I started using this mixture of C++ and C Sharp. So I got a chance to dig into some of the new language features of C Sharp, and boy, was I surprised. So now I can say C++ and C Sharp are, once again, two of my favorite languages. Let's talk about Moore's Law. Moore's Law is an excuse that I've personally used many, many times to try to convince my managers to port some of the older C++ code to C Sharp. There's no need to spend a lot of time, you know, digging and trying to make sure that your program really performs the best it can, because, you know, in 2 years everybody's gonna get twice as fast computers, right? Well, Moore's Law doesn't really say that, but let's forget about that and just move on, because this was kind of true up to the year Vista, or 2006, as people like to call it. Now, Windows Vista had a whole range of problems with that release, but Windows Vista followed a path that seemed as a very straightforward path for so many years. Computers are gonna get twice as powerful, and why not put more features in the operating system if it runs a little bit slower? It doesn't matter. Computers are going to catch up. Unfortunately, people started buying these netbooks. And all of a sudden, world started changing. The netbooks weren't able to run Windows Vista. And Microsoft had to put XP on them first. Then they made Windows 7. And as we all know, Windows 7 was more optimized, more leaner version of Windows Vista. Some of those really fancy features were scaled down. And after that, we got Windows 8. And if you ignore new user interface, what you basically got is even faster and most optimized operating system than Windows 7. So is Moore's Law still valid? In 2006, we were programming with this range of CPUs, and now, depending on platform, You might be programming on CPUs that are definitely faster, or you know, maybe it's a toss-up for mobile phones. But if you're going for smartwatches or Internet of Things, you will definitely be programming on much weaker CPUs, on much more constrained memories. But Moore's Law doesn't say that computers are going to get twice as fast every 2 years. It actually says that the number of transistors in CPU will double every 2 years. So where do those transistors go? Well, as you can see on the schematic of Core i7, most of it goes to cache. And you'll notice shared L3 cache in the middle, memory controller on the bottom, and distinct lack of L1 and L2 caches, because inside of each one of these cores, there's a dedicated space for each one of those. So it would be really good if we had programming languages that would allow us to take a good advantage of all of this cache. Welcome to rebirth of C++. I'm gonna first try to convince you why you should use C++. Then I'm gonna be talking a little bit about what is different between these two programming languages, or more easily put, why can't C++ be just more like C#? And then I'm gonna go through some of these new changes that came in recently that make C++ not only easier to write, but far more importantly, easier to read. Alternative slide, speed. New platforms, and by new platforms I do mean mobile devices, I do mean cloud, I do mean this Internet of Things that are coming. All of these bring some new rules. So with desktop applications, you know, your program can't wait for half a second or so while it's loading something. And computers are even not going to be annoyed anymore. They're used to using mouse and keyboard allows people to slow down. We have even trained our users not to keep on pressing enter where your program is responding, because, oh no, the windows are just going to start jumping out at you. And for the cloud, you can obviously notice that you're paying for CPU cycles, so money. Second is API access. Not all of the APIs are going to be exposed to higher level programming languages. And this was a constant problem that Microsoft had trying to deliver new versions of Windows, where they deliver new and nice APIs, but you know, most of their developers are using .NET, so they can't still use them. Recently, Microsoft has decided to keep DirectX, just in order for it to be able to evolve in unmanaged space. There's a new media set of APIs that are exposed almost primarily to C++. If you're targeting few other platforms, again, API is most likely to come out for C and C++ first. But the main reason is, as I said, speed, performance. If you're not interested in performance, you really shouldn't be here, because C++ is all about performance. So what is performance today? Well, again, analogies. C++, sports car, C#, I don't know, maybe Honda Odyssey. Much more comfortable, both of them probably equally fast in congestion. But there is a difference when you are on a clear road, when you do need to overtake. User experience. This is especially important for mobile applications. What users don't want to do is scroll and wait, and they don't want UI to jump, they want smooth animations. Hey, they will even complain if your frame rate drops. even if it's line of business app. Performance is also about being cool. Not looking cool in the sports car where you're driving, but obviously for mobile applications, if your app uses less of battery because it can do things faster, users will be able to spend more time in your app. More importantly than that, users with the burnt fingers, because battery just burned them, will not leave 5-star reviews in any of the app stores. Performance is also about being able to do more or to deliver more value to your customer. You do have limited set of instructions or memory available to impress your customers. So if you can do what you could have done in 2 seconds, in half a second, well, maybe you can squeeze in a little bit extra functionality. Maybe you can be disruptive in the market. Sports car usually tend to be much lighter than family sedans. They're lightweight, so that engine, although it is faster, also tends to propel that car more easily because it has less weight to push. And C++ is lightweight. So in the latest build conference, the new infrastructure for Windows Phone background tasks was introduced, and almost all demos and messages were coded in C++. Again, background tasks, if you haven't programmed, are really limited. They have a limited amount of time, limited amount of memory that they cannot run over, in which they can run. And I found this nice blog which compared C# versus C++, memory usage in this case. The blog found that writing is fairly straightforward in both of the languages. I mean, this is smaller code. On the mobile apps, you will be far more focused. You'll be able to just write smaller pieces of code and spend more time with that little bit of code. So yes, the rules have changed there as well. But you can see here that for two tiles, C++ uses pretty much half of memory of C#. Performance is also about demos. So, yes, we may say that performance has been a solved issue because we talked about this several years ago and concluded that C# is, you know, approximately 15 to 20% slower than C++. But as I said, things are changing. CPUs are changing. And when it comes to performance, benchmark is everything. Always benchmark. The old rules, even the old logic, doesn't really stand when CPUs change. So let's see how much things have changed. I have picked up some of the sample code that was on the internet and was run several years ago, which did conclude that, yes, C++ versus C#, about 80% difference. So I decided to run it again. First, I'm going to run C# with two tests, and these are all compiled with just release settings. So I have chosen two algorithms. One of them is going to have is going to be impacted more by optimizations in C++. The other one is going to be impacted less. So that you just know, not everything is going to run that much faster. And we're going to run C++ as well. Now, you might see that, yes, it's not that terrible. We're still in that range. And many programming language designers, when they talk about their programming languages and how much are they different from the native, usually use these kinds of tests. And these kinds of tests are basically just make C++ run in release and use the option here that says run as fast as you can. So can you see this? So let's zoom in. Here is maximize speed, favor fast code. But as you might notice, C++ has tons of options for a reason. And they don't mention these options when they're talking about performance versus C++. Again, for a good reason. If we go to code generation, we're going to change here a floating pointing model and say, I'm not really that fast about precision. And I'm also going to say, use this set of instructions. And by the way, in C++, you can set these properties per file. You will find it in most situations that C++, the fact that C++ compiler compiles a single file at a time is a bit annoying because you have to keep on holding its hand and telling it, yeah, there's actually this function in another file somewhere. But just the fact that you can compile into single executable files that have been compiled with multiple configuration options can be really awesome, because then you can in runtime decide which one of the classes you're going to run with a different instruction set. So, does anybody want to guess what number we're going to get now? So, here are the previous C sharp and the old C++. Anybody want to make this interesting?
1.5?
Well, currently it's 1.3.
Zero.
First one, I was thinking 0.9. Ah, sorry. 0.9. Okay, let's see. So 0.3, right? Or is that closer? Yes. So just changing this option all of a sudden gives you this big performance boost. Now, C++ is not only about these instruction sets. C++ is more about control of your memory. And how important control of your memory is, we're going to see in our second demo. So, in this second demo, I'm going to run a single test three times. First time, you're going to see something that's very similar to what you might have done in any programming language. So here we have this particle structure. It has ID, name, type, but the important thing for this demo is this vector which consists of X and Y. And the first test is just going to scatter them randomly through on the heap, just like any managed programming language or higher-level programming language would. In the second test, I'm going to do exactly the same thing, except these particles are going to be laid out one after another. Something, again, you might be able to do in C-sharp if you're using just structures and arrays. And the third one is going to be silly. For the third one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create two new arrays for X's and Y's. Then I'm going to do copying of X's and Y's into those arrays. Then I'm going to do my loops, my calculations, and then, so here are those copy operations here and here. And then after that, I'm going to copy them back. It's identical code. I'm just going to run it. And I'm going to run even more instructions than in the second one. So let's see what can we get out of that. First, we're running, you know, standard randomly allocated code. Second, lay them out one after another. And third, the silly code. That's in no way optimal code. Obviously, your code can be optimized not to do that copy operations within calculation loops. But this just illustrates a point about the cache, a point how cache is important. All of these calculations use same instruction sets, same instructions in each case. It's just how memory is laid out. And how memory is laid out can get you more than three, almost four times performance benefits. Just having control of your memory. So where does the speed come from? Well, C++ compiler is awesome. And when I do say awesome, I mean in the original sense of that word. Not everything is awesome, awesome. Awesome meaning a bit fear-inspiring because it does have lots and lots of options. If you ran through those property pages, yeah, probably shouldn't be telling you this. I'm not supposed to scare you off using C++. But I will. There's more options than those that are shown in UI. They're documented, and some of them are extremely useful. Some of them will give you reports that tell you, hey, you can change this a little bit so that I can do a better job, and you will get even more speed. And then there's options that are not documented and not exposed to UI. Runs 100% on a developer machine. This seems like an oxymoron, right? Doesn't every compiler run 100% on developer's machine? Well, C Sharp runs a little bit on developer's machine and runs a little bit in the jitter while your user is trying to use its program. Not really an optimal time, but C++ will do its job, oops, entirely on developer on a build machine, which is why C++ developers tend to have a lot of free time. If you ever tried to compile C++ code, medium-sized C++ code, you'll get to appreciate speed of C-sharp compiler so much. But it does a lot. There's really a lot of options. I mean, you can have C++ compiler instrument your code, look at how you're executing your code, and then change layout of structures and everything in order to allow for faster execution. It's amazing. You have access to the full CPU instruction set, which can be really beneficial because not only can compiler generate the code, which is recommended, you might want to violate one of those prime directives for developers, which means develop your source code like it's going to be maintained by homicidal maniac. You can write your own in Syntrix. You can call those CPU instructions yourself if you want to. It's not really recommended, but at least it might give you an idea of why some things need to change in your code to be faster. Control of memory, knowing how data is laid out in memory. If you use Visual Studio, there are some debugger windows that all of a sudden light up. Memory window in debugger is all of a sudden very, very useful. Variables don't get moved here and there, and you can see how those structures actually look. You can control where certain structures are going to appear in memory and how are they going to be laid out. And yes, Visual Studio will give you some help, but in some cases, if you do need extreme performance, there are some really good profilers that might help you even more. And yes, hardware is getting faster, but CPU performance is getting much faster than a memory performance, which means that this difference between managed and unmanaged code is just gonna increase and keep on increasing. Well, I hope I got your attention and you're interested in C++. Let's see why C++ can't be more like a C sharp. So first is a difference in philosophy. C# was developed to be a Microsoft bit of success. So you start using it, and all the good things start to happen. It's relatively easy to learn, maybe medium to master, but yeah, it's really, really comfortable. C++ is, it says here, lightweight programming language, and if you thought that that means lightweight in the terms of syntax, you haven't been paying attention. What it means is that there should be no space for any programming language faster than C++ except for assembler. It means that you get to pay only for features that you're actually using. And C++ developers really stick to those rules. You know, you don't get several megabytes of downloading, you know, runtime because there are enums with, you know, 1,000 colors that are named and you're not going to use them. No. If you don't use map, the map will not show up in your code. Use vector, yeah, that's what's going to show up in your code. C# runs on kind of a virtual machine, CLR, but you still do need a programming language to write that virtual machine. C# uses garbage collection, and garbage collection has been proven to be one of the most important developments when it comes to developer productivity. Not speed. C++ uses, obviously, manual memory management, and now we have a bunch of smart pointers that make that development even easier. And believe it or not, they have space for optional, and they don't call it garbage collection because it's insulting. They called it litter collection, because if you're using C++ properly, you really shouldn't have that much garbage. So that's optional, but still nobody really implements it. C# is type safe. Why would anybody want to cast string to an integer? That's silly. Let's not let them do that. They'll just shoot themselves in the foot. Yes, you do need to cast strings to integer because there are really good reasons. I need to copy it this way, I need unions, I need to represent all kinds of data structures. So C++ does not have a guaranteed type safety. C# has Microsoft behind it, and it has huge standard library. .NET is huge. Not only it's huge, it's been copied and pasted several times. You have several implementations of .NET. C++ doesn't have a single company behind it, so its standard library is fairly small, though things are changing. Oh yeah, one more thing to note. Visual C# compiler is pretty much C# standard. What shows up in there is the standard. For a C++ standard, do not expect Visual C++ to implement the full standard. It's just gonna implement parts of it. But the good thing is that unlike Visual C++, which with every update cannot add new features just like that, because it needs to update all .NETs on every client machine, C++ does. With every Visual Studio update that you received, C++ compiler has added new language features and extended their libraries and fixed a few bugs, which is neat. So, C++ was developed to help us solve problems that were introduced with just regular C code, which was very popular. Then people started using C++ massively to write Windows applications. And although there were several attempts at making very good libraries, it proven to be a bit of a tricky task. So Microsoft decided to try to improve C++ further and added two more pluses. Then because that's silly, slid them down and we got C#. So C# has been developed to to help us solve the problems of old C++ development. Well, new C++ has also been developed to help us solve problems with the old C++ development. So let's see how they stack up. Let's see what are those new changes in the modern C++. C++ has a standard, and it's on isocpp.org, and this is a map of progression. And you can see that C++ 98 was released, obviously, 98 of C++ did exist before this time, it just wasn't standardized. Then you see really a big empty space between 98 and C++ 11, and that's where everything regarding C-sharp happened. So you might be forgiven for thinking that C++ was really dead. I did. C++ 11 introduced so many major changes that it does feel like a brand new programming language has been developed, but it has full compatibility with the previous versions. And now we have C++ 14, and that has been approved just last month. So new standard is there, and Visual C++ already does implement some features from this new standard. And you can see in the bottom whole bunch of technical specifications that are coming into the language. These are standard library extensions, and some of them you might be surprised that C++ never had, like file system, networking. Yes, these were not in standard libraries. You had to use third-party libraries or platform-dependent APIs. So let's talk about some of the features that you might recognize from C Sharp that are very welcome in modern C++. Auto-enraged for loops, or for each. So this is a horrific looking loop, and they can look much worse than this actually, from old C++. And all that most developers want to do is just iterate through the loop. So first thing we introduced is auto, which is an equivalent of C Sharp's var, and all of a sudden the code starts becoming far more readable. But we still have this iterator and vector and begin. So let's make a few more changes. And look at this. This is as readable as C Sharp code, isn't it? What about lambdas and functional programming? Yes, we have that. And as you can see here, we have here a function. And this allows us to define what type of a function it is. So this function is going to be returning void and taking in integer as a parameter. Here is it, that integer being taken and printed out. And this area over here is your captures. In C Sharp, captures happen automatically, which in some really limited situations can cause problems and unexpected results. In C++, everything is explicit. This is how we use the function, just like any other function. This is how we do captures. Now, you'll notice that this capture over here, x, can be used, but what value will it have? If I change x after this statement, it's still going to have value of 4. Because this way of capturing is called copy capturing. Basically, this x will be copied at the line when where this lambda is defined. So no surprises there. If you change x later, it won't change inside of this code. But what if you want it to change? Well, you can put an ampersand in front of that x, or, like I did in this case, you can just say, you know what, I'm going to relax a little bit, compiler can figure out what's going to be captured, and I want to capture everything that's used by reference. And that allows me to modify this x from inside a lambda. And just side note, This is how you declare what this lambda is going to be returning. It's a syntax that you might see be used even for functions. I personally don't like it that much in functions and methods, but for lambdas, there's no choice. And you will also notice that I can put auto over here because there's no equivalent of expressions. So, you know, it's always going to be a function. Uniform initialization. So if you wrote any of the modern C-sharp code, you might like just being able to declare your arrays this way, that you don't have to keep on adding element after element. So C++ has expanded on a feature that was there since C, and now it can be used quite broadly. So for example, this defines a vector with three elements. This defines a map with two elements, equivalent of a hash table or dictionary. And if we look at the user structure over here, we can initialize it just like this. It's based on position. Better than that, I can return user just like this. I don't have to specify here user nothing. It knows. What if I have a user that has its own constructor? Yes, I can call it this way. So this is one change in the syntax that you'll definitely be seeing. Probably everybody is going to start constructing their objects using this uniform initialization. Raw string literals. You ever tried to write down the file path in C++? Been annoyed that you just have to doubling those backslashes, or wrote regular expressions and you know how hard they are, and now you have to go and destroy them even more? Well, you can just write your paths like this. It's a bit more verbose than C sharp, but now I can use double quotes. I can just copy paste my XML and not have to replace every double quote with a single quote. That's handy. What if I want double quote and a bracket for some reason in a string? Sure. I can put whatever I want between double quote and bracket, and when I close it the same way, that's when string terminates. Handy. So these are some of the features we went to with examples. There's a few others I'm just going to mention. So there are delegating constructors, just like in C-sharp. There's in-class member initializers, so you can just write for your fields their values. You don't have to initialize them in every constructor. There's enum classes, so classes just like in C-sharp, in C++ previously, enum classes used to pollute parent namespace. There's override and final keywords. Again, work just as you expect. There's tuples, and there's attributes. But do keep in mind, these are not the same attributes that Visual C++ uses. This is a new standard. So what about some of the new features that are specific to C++? Let's go through them one by one. Default and delete. Now, if you just declare your class or a structure, C++ is going to automatically define several members. It's going to define your default constructor, it's going to define your copy constructor, it's going to define your assignment operations. So as long as you don't override any of those, you're fine. But what if you need to? Well, you're going to lose all of those defaults. Now, with this equal default, you can just bring them back. And you can pick and choose what you're going to bring back. Delete is complete opposite. In this case, I'm saying I don't want copy constructor to be generated or used. And you could have done that by using, for example, private and just declare an empty function. But this will actually give you much better error message. But there is even better way how to use this. I have here function f that takes in double. And as you know, some are from C++, C#, you can pass to it an integer. So how do you prevent your developers from passing in integers? Well, you declare the same function at the bottom and you say it's been deleted. And then people can't use it. And this turns out to be very useful for writing libraries, as we'll see. Move semantics. Previously, C++, you know, this really great performance language had a bit of a problem, and that's that a lot of expressions tended to create a lot of temporary objects, and if those temporary objects had to be copied and they had their own resources, those resources had to be copied, and then the old ones had to be deleted, and this created a mess. So people were creating all kinds of hacks and workarounds to try to get around this set of problems. And here we can see we have the underscore R, which is some resource. You can imagine it's huge, maybe it's a megabyte big. And in destructor, we are deleting it if it is set. And here's a copy constructor, and does what copy constructor should do. It allocates the new one, passes in the old one, so that it can be copied. Now, we can solve this inefficiency by introducing a move constructor. And you can see here, these double ampersand. That will tell compiler that if compiler can figure out that variable is temporary variable, or if you specify explicitly that it can be moved from, what's going to happen is that this R is just going to be transferred to the new instance, and then it's going to be cleared from the old instance. And there's not going to be any copying, much faster, much better, very useful. Very useful when it comes to our new smart pointers. These are pronounced SharePutter. SharePutter is what C-sharp developers would like to have in C++. It's non-intrusive reference counting. You know, you're just going to assign stuff to it. When the last reference is released, it's gone. It's wonderful. Because it's C++, you can configure how it's going to be deleted. It is, however, recommended that you use this syntax to initialize SharePutter, and this is going to call this constructor over here through some magic I'm going to explain later. But yes, SharePutters are wonderful. They will greatly simplify our code. They will do exactly what you think they will if you just put them in your structures. You don't have to worry about memory management. They also have an equivalent weak putter, which does kind of what its name suggests. You can take a weak pointer to a shared pointer, and it's not going to increase reference count. When you lock it, it's going to give you another shared pointer. You can test whether object is alive or not. So it's all fun and games. Except C++ developers will not going to like this. They don't like this because it's a bit of a heavyweight. You know, naked pointers are what they're aiming for, and that's because of the memory, how big it is. Now, if we add here a few fields for reference counting and stuff, that's all nice, but you know, how that's going to explode memory? I don't want those. So that's why we have a unique putter. C++ darling. Unique putter has the same performance profile as the naked pointer, which means you can just replace all of the naked pointers and never ever use delete again. So what's the difference? Well, I can't pass unique putter inside a function like this. It has explicitly deleted copy constructor preventing this from happening. So how do I pass it? Well, I need to know that and specify that I actually want ownership of that test object to be passed to function. And now, after this call, this test is going to be reset. It's going to be empty. And this value over here, its ownership is going to be passed inside of that function. And what happens is up to that function. Variadic templates. If you ever worked with tuples in C#, you might have pressed F12 on a tuple and went and saw several copy-pasted definitions. You might have asked, wait, isn't copy-pasting bad? So variadic templates allow you to do what we can always wanted with generics and templates, to say this can have as many parameters as you want. Here's an example. We have here this function that's templated, and it has first this class t, which is going to strip out the first value recursively from the args. Here's the args definition. Here they go inside. And that's how they're declared. And here I can use this size of operator to say how long is this args array currently, and then I'm going to call the expander recursively. And by using this syntax, this is going to expand args, and again it's going to call same function if it has arguments, or if it has none, it's going to eventually end up over here. There's not really any easier ways of currently doing this, but C++ can inline all of this code so it can look much better when you're using it. User-defined literals. Well, from the world of F-sharp and units over there, we can kind of do something similar in C++. So you can define your own literals, meaning you can define your own suffixes that are going to convert whatever value comes in to whatever objects you want. In this case, something simple. How about something like this? How verbose does C-sharp now look? And there's extensions for minutes and so on. All of this as part of C++ 14 standard. Also, complex numbers. Just to mention, we are also getting binary literals, because, you know, if you're going to be doing some binary masking and unmasking, it's much easier to read it like this. Okay, so those are some of the new features that you might like and enjoy in C++. So let's see how Microsoft took these changes and applied them to how we write apps for Windows Store and Windows Phone, of course. So I've created here, I don't know how visible this is. Oops, tooltip. I have created a modern hub app template, and I have brought into the shared project over here source code from the projects below. And I'm just going to start it just to show you how it looks like first. There it is, hub template. You can run this test. And yeah, it does what you expect. It's not overly impressive demo. It looks nice, but what is impressive is the code behind it. The reason why the code is impressive is not because it runs fast or anything. It's because it looks much better than you expect. So how many people here have been programming WPF or XAML style apps? Quite a few, so you've worked with view models. So let's take a look at this benchmark view model. We have a bindable attribute at the top. As I said, this isn't standard. This is Microsoft extension to language. We have public ref class, which again is not really standard. This is Microsoft extension. But that's because all of the languages in WinRT runtime communicate through this .NET metadata standard. So we have to specify whether the class is C# equivalent of a class or whether the class is actually C# equivalent of a value of a struct. Inheritance, you can mix, you know, native C++ code and the WinRT types, but if you mix them, you can't make them public. So this is obviously private. Here is an internal constructor, which takes share putter of the exception policy, and type defs are awesome, by the way. C# really needs type defs. If you're using, you know, generics, fluid interfaces, whatever, you know, you'll appreciate type defs. So type def here, this benchmark func that I'm using in a few places, is just defined as a function that will return wide string. That's it. So we're taking that in. Here are auto-defined properties. I command can run, is running, an observable collection of those strings. And if you're wondering what this is, that is WinRT equivalent of shared pointer. It's reference counted, and it can be nicely exposed to C#. C# knows what to do with it. Don't worry about it. Okay, so let's see how it's implemented. So we have here run command, which is a delegate command. There's a can execute delegate, and you will notice this ref news. So all of the ref classes, all of the Microsoft WinRT types are initialized through these ref news. And this execute delegate binds to this instance and to this member function. This can execute delegate will bind to this simple lambda. It takes in this, and that's because it's actually exposing this property. If this all looks very C# like, that's because it was meant to make you feel welcome. You can write the code that does the same thing in a raw C++, and if you have been programming for C# for a very long time, it will hurt. This is far more friendlier. And here is running, that will change the value of can run, fire two property change events, reevaluate command, and here is the actual run. Run will set is running to true, disabling the button will create here an async workflow. And by the way, C++ still doesn't have async await full equivalence of C#, but they are working on it. So in this way, we're going to run this benchmark, this test, asynchronously, return the result, wrap it into the platform-specific string, and as a continuation, run this lambda, which is going to reset is running and append the result. So yes, I believe it's time to reevaluate one of those things that gets installed with every edition of Visual Studio, C++ compiler. You can play with it. You can consider replacing some parts of code. I am not suggesting that you replace your full apps. There is time and place for C++. Don't go crazy. Modern C++ is much easier to write and read than old-style C++, and most importantly, it's the easiest language to write performant code. You do not have to fight against the language to get the performance. In C#, a lot of game developers, for example, were trying to figure out all kinds of hacks to, you know, prevent garbage collector from running while player is actually playing the game, or how to force, you know, all of the structures to be precisely laid out as they need to be. There's no need to fight against the language in C++ for performant code. And all of these language extensions, I hope, will make your transition into world of C++ far more easier than it could have been. Yes, there is a C++ compiler coming from C#. It's still preview, but .NET Native will compile your C# code finally to just native code, eliminating need for JIT. Doesn't do everything you might expect from C#. You can't do some of the advanced things. I don't think you can still do even WCF on it, but it can greatly improve performance of your apps. It is for Windows Store apps currently available. There's a new jitter being developed for .NET, which includes new faster x64 jitter and also includes those extended instruction sets that I showed you, so you'll be able to optimize even your C# code with it. There is this conference that is available on Channel 9. There is also Build Conference. Both of these are awesome resources going native. If you really like programming languages, if you do care about C++, I do recommend. These are all 400 sessions. These are guys who write standard. These are guys who write compilers and standard libraries. Just awesomeness. So for some of the related content, I recommend this guy's session. If you're going to be using CLR, you better know what's happening in there. That's at least my opinion. You can find me on Twitter, and I have put source for the demos on the GitHub. If you don't believe me, you can test them yourself. You can play around with them. Other resources, Microsoft Virtual Academy currently contains two nice courses for C++. One is the Introduction to C++ and Standard Libraries. The other one is C++ and DirectX for the guys who really want to maybe write games or dig in deeper. As I mentioned, Channel 9, Build conferences, last year's, this year's, there are several really nice C++ sessions in there as well. Don't forget to complete your evaluations. We all like free stuff. Thank you.